Blog Talk Radio.
Joining me today for a cup of Joe. This is a radio show where we get down and dirty to get to the truth about the problems and solutions surrounding prohibition, civil rights, your freedom and liberties. And so this is a place where we come together. We know the problems, at least we know the problems about prohibition. We talk about them. We have them sort of ground into our face. Get it? Ground, cup of Joe. Anyways, bottom line is our freedom, our families, our way of life, our well-being, sometimes our actual lives and health are affected by prohibition in a negative way. That's the problem. The solution is ending it once and for all, ending prohibition. I'd like to talk about that today. This is our second round with this conversation, and it's because it's a big one. This is a huge conversation, and it's one of the conversations that separates the Human Solution International from many, if not all, of the other groups that I know of. And I think it's an important thing to think about. Where do you stand in this equation? Legalization or prohibition ending? They're two very different things, and I see a lot of literature, I see a lot of messaging that says legalize it, legalize it, legalize it. Think about what that means, okay? We're going to talk about that in a bit. But prohibition, the idea that anything that doesn't cause harm to another person, a behavior, an activity, a substance, a way of being, but of all things, a plant, to be prohibited. Prohibited. That means you can't have it. Go to the Controlled Substances Act. Look it up. It's the federal law, supreme law of the land. Controlled Substances Act says Schedule 1 narcotics, Schedule 1 substances, are the type of substance that is inherently dangerous, is inherently habit-forming, addictive, and has no known medical use. Now, that is the type of substance that cannabis was put into. Now, we know, those of us that are aware, enlightened, so to speak, know that this plant is actually the antithesis of that characterization. It is actually the polar opposite. So let's start with the inherently dangerous part. Okay? Inherently dangerous. That means that some amount of it could cause you, excuse me, harm or even death. Okay? Now we've had this conversation. We had a renowned geneticist and breeder, DJ Short, Daniel John, came onto our show a few months back, and he proposed this notion. To anybody who's a prohibitionist or somebody who doesn't understand the value of ending prohibition, ask them this one simple question. Name a substance on the planet that is less safe, or more safe, I'm sorry, safer than the cannabis plant. Any substance. There isn't one. Well, I haven't been approached with one. Water, rock, sand, any chemical substance, most plants, maybe lettuce. I don't know. Maybe there's some plants that are chemical substance. People are addicted to foods. They're addicted to ways of being. There's sex addicts and porno addicts and chocolate addicts and crazy things. Well, these are not physical addictions. These are psychological dependencies. These are personal problems, I might want to call them. But there are lots of chemicals that do have physical addictive properties. These are properties that when you stop taking them, your body actually has a detox. You go to the DTs. You go to a toxic place where your body goes through withdrawals, goes through physiological symptoms. When I was locked up, watched a lot of people, and that came into the unit that I was in, and especially initially, and there was people that were kicking habit, kicking heroin, kicking methadone, kicking methamphetamine, kicking all sorts of pharmaceutical drugs. And to watch somebody going through a physical withdrawal, hell, I've watched alcoholics go through withdrawals. I mean, you know, the shakes, the puking, the gaunt look, the want to die look, the I can't handle this anymore look. It's a horror story, actual physical withdrawal. So for somebody to even imply that cannabis is in that category of substance is also, once again, ludicrous. And then let's look at, we got inherently dangerous, we've got addictive, and, oh, no, medical use. Yes, go tell that to anybody who has any kind of a clue. You know, I personally have experienced medical benefits of this, and that's without all of the science behind it, without all the studies coming out of countries where they can actually study the plant. We have, the whole Rick Simpson Project. We have hundreds, thousands, maybe even millions of people who have felt the benefit of cancers disappearing, shrinking away, seizures being eliminated completely, autistic kids being treated, topicals healing, pain relieving, sleep allowing, just the list goes on and on. To say that there's no known medical use and that everybody doesn't throw their hands up and say, really, is also, again, ludicrous. And so, we've got to start thinking about this. Prohibition says that this plant is not allowed. You can't have it. You can't have a seed. You can't have one plant. You can't have one joint. You can't have one suppository made from it. You can't have an edible. You can't have a ton of it. You can't have a pound of it. You can't have an ounce of it. You can't have anything, okay? Or you are breaking the law. And it doesn't matter what your state law says. It doesn't matter what your ordinance says. It doesn't matter any of that stuff. The state law, the federal law, which is the supreme law of the land, and if you ever sat in a federal court, you would hear a judge say these things. Jury, you are to disregard all state law as it does not apply in this court. And for those of you who don't think that the feds are still doing anything because of some bullshit memo, a Cole memo, an Ogden memo, a this memo, a that memo, these are not laws, folks. Okay? And if you think that Congress defunded the DEA, so therefore the DEA is not doing anything, go ask Lance Glure. Go ask Roland Gregg. Go ask Cher Christie. Go ask all of the people that are currently facing sentences today, right now. Okay? Go ask these people how the federal law is being applied. Okay? They don't hit everybody. Go ask Marilyn Green. Go ask, the list is gigantic. We know all of these people. These people that have been affected by the federal government. I know I'm going off on kind of a tirade here, but I tend to do that. That's why I have a show called A Cup of Joe and not A Cup of Somebody Else. This is important. This is stuff that has affected me, has taken away my freedom, has affected my family, has affected many loved ones. And I'm passionate about this because it's real. This is a reality. I got a wake-up call this week. A dear friend of mine, a member of the Human Solution, a supporter from the very early times of the Human Solution, a man by the name of Dan Kipikash, passed away over the weekend. And I want to dedicate this show to you, Dan. Dan was always supportive of our efforts, and his wife, Connie, is an amazing person, and she's grieving right now. They were married for, I think, 30 years, a long time. And, to lose somebody like that is a loss that hopefully, unfortunately, we all will feel in one way or another. When this happens, as we get older, as we are working with sick people, you realize how fleeting time is. You realize that you get this one shot. As we know it right now here in this plane, this physical plane that we live in. And, when it's done, it's done. When you're gone, you're gone. And you leave behind a legacy or not. You have touched people or not. You have changed the world or not. And I've put so much time and effort into building and growing the Human Solution. I believe very strongly that what we are leaving behind, if I was to die today, tomorrow, the next day, is going to be something that is capable and has changed and affected many, many people and has the ability to make a powerful and lasting change in our social world. And I do believe that we, as members of the Human Solution and people that have dedicated any portion of our lives to actually ending prohibition. Ending prohibition. We have a saying that says no one should go to jail for a plant. It doesn't say no one should go to jail for a plant unless they had 13 or 15 or unless they had 190 or unless they had 1,090 or 10,090 or 100,090. We don't have a place where you should go to jail for a plant. Okay, well, guess what, folks? That is markedly different from all of the legalization people. All of them. Every single one of them. You know why? Because every single law that has been passed to this date and every bit of legislation that's on the ballot today, every initiative that people are gathering signatures for, every bill that's in the Senate or the House or in any committee or in any lobbyist that's trying to push it forward, any of them and all of them, have a place where you could go to jail for this plant. Look them up. Look at all of them, every single one of them. There isn't one. There was one a few years back that was a repeal law, and I think in Michigan they have a repeal movement going on, and I hope that there's more of this. All you have to do to get rid of a bad law is repeal it. All we have to do is remove the Controlled Substances Act. Take it out. Gone. Pass a law that says there's no more Controlled Substances Act. Guess what? The plant's not legalized. It's decriminalized. Prohibition would be over at that point. That's all we have to do, folks. But nobody's come up with that one. It doesn't show up. And I think that maybe it should. I think it's time that we start having a conversation about ending prohibition rather than simply legalizing something. Allow it, creating a place where it can happen, creating a place where you can have some pot, you can have a plant or two or five, you can make a little medicine. You know what? That's a cop-out. It's not finishing the job because not everybody can grow. Not everybody wants to grow. Not everybody has time. Not everybody has a place to do it. But people need this medicine, and people need to be able to provide it for them. And even if it's recreational, the very definition of recreation is an activity, something that causes you to rest, to recreate, to feel better. By that very nature, it's therapeutic. So even if something helps you to rest and feel better, it is, by its own nature, medicinal. All right, so I'm going to bring up a caller right now. We have Albert Thomas on the line right now. And Albert, I believe, either has court, I think he's got court in a couple of days. He's got a case in Oklahoma right now, and I've actually been talking to some of our teams in Kansas about getting at the ready for this. And I think that I want to hear what Albert has to say. Albert, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Joe. Thank you for taking my call. And, yes, it's tomorrow that I'm in court.
Okay, I knew it was coming up shortly.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else right now, actually.
I have been where you are, I know. You know, it's funny, when you have a case that's going on for a while and, you know, nobody else lives your world, okay? So every court date, I lived my life from court date to court date for 6 long years, and I would run into people I hadn't seen for a while, and they'd say, oh, how's that thing going? I was like, that thing. Yeah, it's going all right. I'll talk to you later. You know, when you have a case in front of you and your freedom's on the line, it's consuming. It's the only thing that matters. And, you know, at any given time, you could go into court tomorrow and not walk out of there. The court judge might decide that for whatever reason you're in violation of something he wants, and he can remand you to custody just like that, because they did it to me 3 times. And I don't think that's going to happen. It usually doesn't happen, but it could. And that is a weight that hangs over you, whether you feel that or not. I hope I didn't just add a weight to your life, but it's the reality that we do live in.
I've actually had that thought, and, you know, Of course, I try to just put it out of my mind, but I'm counting the days, the minutes, the hours, the seconds, all of that stuff. And knowing that when I walk in there, that judge could put me back in jail. And after spending 14 days in jail, that's not very attractive at all.
No, it's not. It's not. The one thing that caused me to think very, very carefully before I do things. And I still make bold moves sometimes, but I always stop and think, I don't want to end up back behind bars. It is not a place for good people to be. That's all I can say.
And so I suffer in that regard because, of course, with the circumstances being what they are, I'm not able to do what I had doing to care for myself. So my nutrition is changed, and, of course, my health is deteriorated as a result. And I'm starting now to have symptoms of diabetes, and the arthritis and inflammation, that kind of stuff. The neuropathic pain is...
Well, you know what? The diabetes is no joke. If you were listening earlier, Dan Kippycash, who were dedicated this show to, that was his primary ailment, was diabetes. And he had a lot of diabetes-related problems that ultimately, I believe, were the cause of his demise. It's no joke. I've watched people go from, you know, having, you know, blood sugar spikes to needing to treat themselves, you know, with their diet to, well, they didn't do that good enough to now they got to get some insulin, and then they still don't take care of it. Next thing you know, they're getting, you know, their pinky toe clipped off, or the next thing you know, they got an infection that won't heal, or, you know, all of a sudden you get, you know, kidney shut down. And fortunately, cannabis is a medicine that can help many people with kidney problems and diabetes. I know many people who have helped to control their diet. You know, the endocannabinoid system is a regulatory system. It actually helps your organs to perform the way they were designed. It helps your body's chemistry to maintain a balance, and that's what diabetes is all about. You know, your body's chemistry, and I've seen many people use cannabis to help them manage diabetes, and you know, clearly that's going to be an issue for you while you're battling your case right now.
Yes. Definitely is. So it just makes for a lot of stress and a bit of maybe uncomfortableness, but I'm at least free. You know, I'm at home. I'm not in jail. So it's livable. I can barely hear you all of a sudden. Are you there, Joe? Something happened. Hello?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
No, it's older. Something went wrong.
I can hear you.
Yeah, I couldn't hear you. You were muffled. It was like you were in the closet or something.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what I get for having a landline that I'm working with. Hopefully it's better now.
Yes, much better. Perfect. Yeah. Okay, so now I forgot where we left off. So.
Well, you were talking about the ability to fight your case, not in custody, and it's a huge
relief.
Advantage that you have.
Oh yes, this would be impossible if I were still incarcerated. There's no way that I could manage, and I just really my heart goes out to those guys that are locked up, and I mean if they've got someone around them that can help, it's a benefit, but. In my case, I'm alone, so I don't have that kind of a support system. I was lucky to get out of jail. In Oklahoma, you need 3 co-signers in order to
get
out of jail. Yeah. And under my circumstances, because I've got family involved, it split the people that were available to me. And so. It's really interesting that one of my
3 co-signers. I wonder what the logic behind that is.
That they want to make sure that they can get someone to answer for whatever crime you've been charged with. And the person.
I guess they don't have a lot of bounty hunters in Oklahoma.
Well, they don't get many people to bounce, I don't think, because one of the people told me that when they were talking to the bail bondsman, he tried to talk them out of getting me out of jail. Told them that they would come and get them if I didn't show up or something. And it was strange to hear that kind of conversation. The man didn't want to do business for some reason, and he told he did not do the bond. It was done by someone else. But it was really, when I heard about that, it was just really, it scared me a little bit because I'm in a place that I know nothing about. And, it's the good old boys are here, and I'm not one of them. So, it's just a scary scenario.
Well, you may be
scenario.
One. You're just not in their club.
Right. That's what I mean. Not
we got our own damn good old boys club. We're just not their club.
Right.
Except for we don't have the same power that they do. Not yet. But you know what? If we keep at it, we will.
Absolutely. With what you're doing here, this effort that you're doing is amazing because it brings us together. I've already spoken with a couple of people now from someone from Kansas and also someone from Oregon from the conversation through your group, through what you're doing with this blog talk radio thing. So I really appreciate
that.
Well,
I believe that, If you look at the origin of prohibition, it was a smear campaign. It was a propaganda campaign put on by the news, William Randolph Hearst and Eli Lilly and a bunch of people that stood to lose a lot of money if hemp and cannabis were allowed to remain legal, remain unchecked. It was a crop. It was something that everybody could have, and it endangered the newsprint business. It endangered the chemical business. It endangered the pharmaceutical business, so much so that they launched this campaign of propaganda, of lies, of twisted tales of reefer madness. And unfortunately, in a world where there wasn't an internet, there wasn't readily available real-time information as there is today, if you print something broad enough and you print it long enough and you print it loud enough, it starts to permeate and people start to buy into it. And it worked, unfortunately, for us. And, you know, there's generations of people and generations of an entrenched justice system, law enforcement system, white papers that date back for a long time that basically declare openly that, you know, drugs are bad, pot's a drug, and everybody who has anything to do with pot is a drug dealer. And, you know, that's just frankly not true. And the truth, as we were just talking about, is the opposite of that. I believe strongly that if enough people just knew the truth, just could see the truth for what it actually is, with a somewhat open mind, would accept the notion that it shouldn't be illegal. It shouldn't be a crime on any level. There's no place for it to be a crime unless somebody's stealing it from somebody or, you know, clubbing somebody over the head with it or something.
Yeah. And, you know, years of documented proof of this plant being unique and does, and as well, that, you know, the only plant around that does, even, I was looking at a reference today on the internet regarding Exodus, where we are saying that the anointing oil that Jesus made actually contained, well, when you get through all of the name changes and interpretations, that the cannabis plant is one that is in that oil. But beyond that, to realize that it actually does much things, you know, not just to know that it's in the Bible, that, you know, there's a Bible reference actually too, that I can see one in and another one in Exodus, but then to see that it actually, we got the science coming in, proving that this plant, the cannabinoidal system that is in our bodies, and that's the only system I've heard of in a body that is somehow connected to a plant, that no matter how you ingest that plant, it knows how to get to that system and heal you. That is just so amazing. And, you know, but to have that biblical reference should, you'd imagine, you know, bring some comfort to people, right, and understanding.
You would think, and yet, you know, you go to most churches, most Christian churches anyways, and they would likely, and it's slowly starting to change. As, you know, the thing it is, as we get older and we know more and more people that have gotten sick, we find more and more people, and most people come to it as a last resort. They don't want to go through horrible surgeries, chemotherapies, radiation treatments. And somebody tells them, well, you know, there is this one alternative treatment that might work for you. And when you're in a desperate time, desperate measures come to act, even though this shouldn't be a desperate measure. It should be the first line measure. But for somebody who would never breach the line of legal, that somebody would never do anything that was against the law, to take that leap to becoming an outlaw by treating yourself with an unapproved substance is possibly an act of last resort. Yet that's where people come to it. And as we get older, as I get older, I find that most of our adversaries, most of the adversaries of prohibition, I mean of freedom of this plant, are older. These are people that have been indoctrinated, again, for generations by this, you know, reefer madness mantra. And yet that awareness, that moment of truth comes when the loved one or themselves say, well, you know, there's this oil that you could take that might just help you. You know, Albert, we have Craig Cecil calling from Terre Haute, Indiana Federal Prison. Well, he's serving a life sentence. I'm going to go ahead and bring him along, and I want to thank you for calling the show today.
Thank you. All right. I'll listen in.
Well, keep me up to date with how your case goes. Call me tomorrow when you're done.
I will. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Craig Cecil, how are you doing today?
Good. Hello, Joe.
How is it going? I said, how is it going?
Well, today it's rainy and chilly. So, unfortunately, people aren't outside or all the other places they could be, and they're all jammed in the south block here. So we're all kind of jammed in together at the moment.
Well, that doesn't sound like any fun at all. I don't want to tell you that it's 85 degrees and a little muggy out here in California today.
We won't see that for a few more months. But since I can't go out, I'm a jogger. So whenever possible, I will jog 2 or 3 miles at supper. Today, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. The funny part is that sometimes it's open out there, and it's drizzling, and if it's warm enough, I'll go out and jog in the drizzle. So it was kind of funny today to hear all the people come and ask me why I wasn't jogging, even though it was raining.
Well, you know, you got to draw your line somewhere, I suppose. Hey, would you tell them to keep it down out there? It's getting a little bit loud.
It is quite a bit loud in here, actually. I'm up on the second floor, kind of away from everybody.
Okay. Well, I wanted to share something with you that I haven't shared with anybody yet, and I thought that this would be a good place to do it. Yesterday, I met with an attorney, and his name is Matt Pappas, and he's actually on our board of directors, and he's a civil rights attorney, and he's done a lot of good work for people, but he's had a lot of personal issues, and for whatever reason, he was incognito for a little while. Anyways, he explained to me some of the reasons that he'd been incognito, and it seems that he's ready to dig in and help our efforts once again in a fairly substantial way. And we're going to be going at we're going to be making some pretty bold moves here before too long. And I have a feeling that if this works out right, we're going to create this sort of dream team of civil rights lawyers and advocates and paralegals and all sorts of legal experts out of this effort. And this has always been a part of my dream and my vision with the Human Solution, is to create this legal clinic, this dream team that could respond whenever needed, that could take the offensive when was needed, and could, of course, respond as on an appeal or whatever. And it looks like there's more of a chance of that happening now than ever before. So I just wanted to share that with you. I had about a 3-hour meeting with him yesterday, and we had this. It came by along kind of suddenly. I had almost given up on the guy, and you know, he'd been MIA for a good long while, and so I have a renewed hope in that. I've had ads running and gotten a little bit of response, but he says that he's got dozens of people, of legal professionals, that are interested in participating in this project.
That would be fantastic, because, like I've said before, I think the biggest problem with the Bureau of Prisons, and even in the court legal proceedings, in terms of, you know, people that get appointed court-appointed lawyers or federal defender lawyers, there's nobody that oversees the federal defenders that seems to are actually doing the job they should be doing to their clients. And especially the Bureau of Prisons, there's nobody that oversees what happens to us prisoners in here. And our only avenue for relief, such as when they close the dental office for 5 months, is we have to file our grievances within the prison system, and those all get the same silly answer that, you know, your claim is unsupported. And then we have to file a suit in court, and those suits are made so tricky in a federal court that a regular prisoner without specialized legal experience and legal training, so often they file it. For instance, if you name the Bureau of Prisons on it, they'll throw the suit out because you're not allowed to sue the Bureau of Prisons. That's actually a reading of the 11th Amendment of the Constitution. But
well, you know what? You just brought up a very, very important point. And as much as I am not a huge fan of most attorneys, the one thing that I've noticed is anytime somebody tries to fight their case in pro per or pro se, representing themselves, the biggest problem that they have is they don't know the rules, and they don't know how to file something right. They don't know how to deal with the rules of court. And what happens is, just you said, if you don't do something just right, it can be thrown out on a technicality. It can just be completely, all that work could be for nothing. And especially if we're trying to be proactive, and if we're trying to, you know, file a lawsuit to cause a change to happen, and if you can't file it appropriately, especially when you're in the appellate court, and you're trying to actually get some case law pushed forward, or heaven forbid, the Supreme Court, there's a very specific protocols that have to be followed, and it comes down to the spacing of the type, the font that's used, the color of the folder, things that can be named and not named, just like you mentioned. And if you don't know those things, all the passion and all the knowledge of the law that you might have, and all the goodwill and intentions, is for nothing, because that detail that you overlooked or didn't come upon could cause all that work to be for nothing.
I can vouch for that. When I first got to the first prison I was sent to, the Big Sandy Penitentiary in Kentucky, my direct appeal hadn't been put in yet. But they had adopted a rule there where we were not allowed to use the telephone during the week. So I could never make a phone call to even try to get the address to write a letter to, you know, to follow up on my appeal in my criminal case. So I finally ended up filing suit then to say, you know, I really want to be able to talk to my lawyer. And the court ended up throwing the lawsuit out because I named, you know, Craig Cecil versus their name in the lawsuit, the person that would have been responsible for allowing me to call.
Right.
And they threw out the lawsuit because I didn't write in their individual capacity after their name.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the kind of thing that people don't realize. In my case, when we filed a writ, it got accepted, but when the appellate court, or I'm sorry, when the judge that actually ruled that I got a new trial over the jury verdict came back with her ruling, she lambasted both of the attorneys on the defense side because they had made some critical errors that could have got that writ thrown out, and I might not have even had that chance. And these are attorneys that did that. So imagine, you know, literally every single time I've watched somebody file a case on their own, there's problems. Well, that's one of the things that Matt did, and he's working with a couple of people in Kansas right now. And they filed a lawsuit in pro per, but he actually reviewed the lawsuit, put it together for them or with them, and made sure that it would get accepted. And they still were able to you know, file pro per the way they wanted to, but he was able to review it, make sure that there wasn't any critical procedural problem with it.
I mean, that would be so invaluable. He could have looked at mine and said, no, you have to write in their individual capacity after the day. I mean, something I would have, you know, I never even considered, and they used that to throw out the lawsuit.
Well, and that's the thing is, you know, for anybody who thinks that the justice system is just, you know, every attorney that we've ever had on here says, well, we like to refer to it as the legal system, not the justice system, because there are specific rules and things that are mandatory and necessary, and if you don't follow them, you don't get anything, and that has nothing to do with justice whatsoever.
So often, people accused of a crime don't get justice because they're appointed a federal defender attorney who's trying to defend 50 or 60 different people all at the same time. It really doesn't have the time to look into the, you know, what the facts of his first case are, you know, what, you know, the possible alibis are, you know, to interview the defendant sometimes. Like, I think I told you about a case where a man, this was a man in his mid-60s, was arrested for methamphetamine and given a 12-year sentence. And I looked at the test results of the drug lab that had tested it. It was a cold pill.
Wow.
It was not methamphetamine at all. It was amphetamine. And it was in a mixture which was actually legal.
Wow. and you know what? It doesn't surprise me even a little bit that happened. It's just, you know, it's the nature of the beast. If you don't, you know, when you go into court, you're dealing with a horribly one-sided equation where the people that are on the other side of that bench, they go there every day. They go to work. This is their life. It's their world. You go in there, you've never been there before. You don't know anything. You don't know how to operate. You don't know how to be. You don't know how not to be. You don't know what's going to get you thrown out. You don't know what's going to be effective. And unfortunately, so many times, the attorneys that are supposed to be representing you don't do what's necessary. And the other side, they're just doing their job. They do the same thing they do every day. You know, I guarantee you, if you did the same thing every day, no matter what it was, after a while, you get pretty good at it, even if you weren't naturally talented.
In that situation, I mean, there should have been a prosecutor punished for that, because the prosecutor obviously had that paper that said it was a legal drug and still continued to prosecute him. His lawyer that was supposed to defend him should have had some sort of sanctions. I mean, but no, there's nobody that regulates that. There's nobody to say that these people are punished and
this
shouldn't happen.
Well, that's absolutely true. And, you know, I think that if we could put together this team, you know, we're still having a discussion about legalization versus ending prohibition. And, you know, I looked up the term legalize, and it's funny. It says to make something legal or to allow something by law. But the reality is, when you have something that is a plant, how do you make that allowable by law? It's a plant. It's going to be there whether there's a law or not. You know, it's not, we didn't create this plant. We didn't manufacture it from nothing. It existed before we ever did. So how do you make that legal or not legal? It's something that exists on the planet. That's like making sand illegal. You can't. It doesn't make sense.
You explained is that in some of these places you're allowed to possess up to 4 ounces of marijuana, and you can grow 3 or 4 plants.
Right. You have to be the worst grower in the world to accomplish that.
I think a plant yields what, somewhere around a pound maybe? Or?
Well, an indoor plant can yield from an ounce to a couple of pounds. An outdoor plant can yield from a half a pound to many pounds. I mean, I've seen plants that have yielded 15, 20 pounds. What it's saying is basically you have to be a terrible grower to be able to comply with that law, or you become an outlaw. And so I say, what's the point of that law?
Yeah, I mean, how did they call that decriminalization when all they've done is created a trap?
Exactly, and that's what people don't realize. I was just, we were preparing for a trial this week from a cancer patient who had over the number of plants that the California law says you can have without extenuating circumstances. You're about to get cut up. Final words, Craig.
But thank you for shining a light on here. And thank you for the help with the attorney. I think he can help make the lives better for 195 of us federal, or 195,000 federal prisoners.
Well, I will continue to update you, but know that you were the first to hear it. I haven't told this to anybody yet.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you to him.
All right, Craig. We'll talk to you soon. There he goes. He got cut off once again. Craig Cecil calling from Terre Haute, Indiana. where he's currently serving life without the possibility of parole. For what a plant. You know, everybody who comes along and says, yeah, woo, 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 we won already. It's just a matter of time. I don't know how to explain Craig to you or any of the others. And there are many, as he just pointed out. There's lots of different worlds. There's lots of different elements. There's lots of different things. And if you take a microscope and you look at a piece of dirt, you will discover there's a whole world inside of that with colonies of creatures and animals and plants and every kind of thing. You look inside your own body under a microscope, you see whole worlds of things. There's chemical worlds and electrical worlds and all sorts of things. Well, guess what? There's also a world of prison. There's a world that is the legal world that only comes when things are legalized or not. And frankly, to make something to allow by law, which is the simple definition of legalize, as according to Merriam-Webster, it doesn't end it. It doesn't solve that problem. Because unless they specify that any and all consumption, possession, transportation, distribution, concentration, manufacturing, whatever you want to call it, in conspiracy thereof, is allowed by law, which they won't. Unless they did that, there isn't any legalization that solves our problems. I was expecting there to be a few people to come in and have this debate with me that I don't see that have shown up. You know, it's a funny thing. I've had this radio show now for about 3 years, and there's a world of social media where people like to be loudmouth bullies and have their opinions be broad and bold. But you know what? For 3 years now, I have issued a challenge. I've issued a debate, an open, honest debate that we would be civil and honest and real, and I have yet to have one person take me up on this debate. So if anybody wants to explain to me why your legalization is going to be better than us ending prohibition, I would love to hear it. Now, we did have Lisa Sublett on the radio last week, and she explained that they did pass a law that they felt was the only thing that they could get to pass, and they felt that it was better to have a law that at least opened the door in a place like Kansas. And, you know, I struggle with that one because, of course, you know, it's better to have some freedom than no freedom. And in Kansas currently there's no freedom. So, you know, on some level I would have to say that, you know, if you have a plan to open the door wider, once it gets open some, I think that's a good one. But at the end of the day, if we celebrate a victory that is partial or empty, and still allows for somebody who's doing the very same thing that you experience and enjoy the luxury and freedom of doing, and the next person right next to you gets picked up and taken away to jail, and the fact that there is little or no outrage to that is unacceptable. And I believe that it's up to us. And that's what the Human Solution is all about, okay? We don't have an initiative we're supporting. We don't have a, you know, a law that we're trying to promote. We're not. We don't have, you know, a little step, a baby step that we're trying to accomplish. But what we do have, we have tools. We have grassroots organizing skills. We have a network. We have tools to bring people together whenever there's a will. Whenever there's a will of one person being willing to stand up and fight, we have the ability to bring the community around. And I guarantee you, even though we have no budget, we're all volunteers, there's no corporate money behind us, there never has been, when the going gets tough, when somebody gets locked up, when they get charged, when the shit hits the fan and somebody is facing a loss of their freedom, guess who they come to? Hopefully they find us. But when they do, they know that we're the one that's going to do the job. We're the one that's going to care. We're the one that is going to be there specifically to help support you if you're a victim of prohibition. All right, we got Tom Corby coming up next. He is an incredible individual, but not a man of brevity, so I'm going to give him plenty of time to talk. And Tom Corby, how the heck are you today?
Thanks, Joe. Always all the folks on the front line. Our goal and vision is always to deschedule cannabis and end prohibition. Free all our POWs. When we talk about POWs, our defendants fighting for their life in these courtrooms are also prisoners of war. Again, here we are, Shelby Lucero, 34th preliminary hearing this Friday morning, Sacramento Superior Court. That's 729th Street in Sacramento. The reason I chuckle is think about it, 34 preliminary hearings. Oh, what's that say? Now, that's contrary to my friend and neighbor here, who I just left working up at his house, as Alex Lyons. He waived his rights to prelim and went straight to Raymond, and he's going right straight on to trial. Alex pointed out how he's going to catch them with their pants down, and I pointed out also they don't want to have to work. Joe's pointed out before, if more people, even 8, 10% of people would take them on to trial and not plea bargain. The plea bargains always sound so good, and they scare you. They all screw you, most all of them. So our mindset is always to go on to trial. Of course, sometimes take less or divide through our best deal, too. It just depends, of course. So Alex is going on to trial, jury selection on the 21st of April. And 29th also, and then he's going on to trial on May 2nd. And also I've talked about, in Northern California, here in Butte County, I talked about Nicholas Moran and Elizabeth Joy's mom. Remember, she was coming down from Michigan in her RV. Nicholas got busted here in Butte by Bentiff April 2nd. Last year, a year ago, near the Bart Farm, actually, near here. He's my neighbor. He's got the usual charges of cultivation, possession, sales, also manufacturing, possession of psilocybin mushrooms for sale. Now, if you'll remember on my case, psilocybin mushrooms, I picked that on my case two ways. Did you know that there's 4 strands of psilocybin mushrooms. One of them grows in my neighbor's cow patty across the pasture. So you can be.
I didn't know there was 4. I knew there was 2 for sure, or so I've been told.
Well, exactly. Anyway, he's up.
I cannot confirm or nor deny any individual testing of these things.
Right. Yeah. So they had 600 baby plants, mostly clones. 150 pounds. I also have 8 collective members. What's that say? If we used the Eddie Left 99 plant rule, which we, with Joseph Tully, with Planted Herb, and Juicin' Drewson, and other cases, we can bring that in. By the way, did you hear that Planted Herb has reopened, Charlie and Linda have reopened their dispensary, Joe. They're open to
I heard that. That's fantastic.
Isn't that great? So
that is fantastic.
Right. So cut to the chase here. Nicholas spent the whole afternoon here. He went up to also up to Alex, who worked on his case. He's got attorney Benjamin Scarf. I met him up at one of Benno hearings up there. Kind of like what Ben's doing. I don't like the fact that he said you're going to have to take the best deal if you get that felony wobbler deal. And I said, oh, wait a minute. So we know about the wobbler misdemeanor, which Joe refused to take. Now, if we could get that with a dismissal on the end, it's a diversion, which Tully said we're starting to get those. That's what you want to buy for. You don't want, do not want to take that felony Walbert misdemeanor, because they screw you with that, especially when you go to trial. They'll bring that in and hold against you. Chris Conrad is going to be part of this defense, and also Alex Lyons. She's the expert on amounts in medicine. So he's already passed arraignment. He's going on to jury selection in July 6th. That's jury selection at 8:30, and on to trial on July 11th, 2016. We know that court support always is.
Now, this is the case that was supposed to go to trial in the end of April. Now it's moved to July.
Who?
You said there was a jury trial that's supposed to start in the end of April. Is that still on, or is that's the one you were talking about?
Well, no. That's Alex Lyons, right? Okay, and
correct.
He. Right, and they got together and up at his house. Alex has jury selection on the 21st of April. It's right here.
Oh, it is. Phil, we're still on for that. Okay.
Right. And listen, he doesn't go to. The guest also has jury selection on the 29th. Doesn't go to trial till May 2nd. And we know that is the most important. And actually, when they're picking a jury, Joe will tell you. It's almost, a few people can be there, but you really can't do much. It's a
yeah, usually they don't even let you in when the jury's being selected because the room's all full of prospective jurors.
Well, exactly. You sit outside, and you can't do, and you have to be very careful now, folks. Everything changes when there's jurors there. Oh, we know that, don't we, Joe? And you have to be careful. Yeah. We try to tell people, we try to, code of conduct, of course, and dress is so important, but we have to be real careful passing out pamphlets, anything to do with jury nullification. We can't talk to any witnesses that are sitting outside. Why do you think they're sitting out there? If you go inside and you come back out there, you can tell them what's going on inside. Now, most of the time, it doesn't matter. But it could surely cause a mistrial and taint the case. We know that. So we just have to be real careful. We can acknowledge the jurors when we dismiss for lunch or whatever. We always stand and we acknowledge each one. We always let the jurors exit the courtroom first. In Butte County now, the last trial I went to with Dan Levine. They got the jurors going up the back door, and there's a back door deals going on. So when people talk about going to trial, it's just not that until a broker. Most people just can't handle it. They just don't know the laws, and they can sure get caught in a trap. We have to be very careful. You can also Julie and the Stenhouses, Rattana had Lance sitting next to him and Dr. Allen as advocates, right? Kind of guiding them there, and the judge actually allowed them to talk. That was in Tehama County. She's still fighting her civil lawsuit to get her Blue Lexus back, and they still have that going on. But so that's going on, and in Northern California, I want to thank everybody today. I'm running out of things to say. I know that's hard for Joe to believe, not being a matter of remedy. Well, that's because we do have a lot to say, and I really feel that we do have the momentum to find the end prohibition. Okay, thank you all today. Come join us. Help be the solution at the Human Solution International.org. Don't forget to use our calendar. You can post all your events and their different. fairness cases, and we can help you most your court support. Well, thank you all today. Thanks, Joe. And don't forget to breathe.
All right. Thank you so much, Tom Corby. All right. Well, I want to talk for a second about Rick and LaPrille's case. You know, Rick is a security guard. He's actually a retired corrections officer, and he has a job that requires or allows him to possess a firearm. And unfortunately, as there came up to select a jury this last Monday, I believe they didn't feel that their attorney was going to be able to really stand up and do this fight. And as always, the prosecutor lays down a last deal right before jury selection, and the judge always encourages them to settle the case so that they don't have to spend the court's time and money on this. Well, problem is, well, there's a lot of problems with this. Obviously, there wasn't an actual crime committed with the victim. That would be a big problem. But the other problem is, you know, Rick's livelihood depends on him having the ability to work as a security guard and the ability to possess a firearm. Well, turns out there's federal rules about these licenses to possess and carry firearms that are oftentimes dramatically affected by a conviction, which, of course, a plea deal would render. So they've got until the 12th to figure this out, whether they're going to accept this plea deal or select the jury. So a week from yesterday, the 12th, they're going to be back in Pomona Court, and hopefully we have our calendar updated, and hopefully, fortunately, we did have a number of people that were at the ready and willing to come out and show support. I wish we had more, but we did have a pretty decent crew, and I want to thank everybody. I want to, you know, this is a moment that I just want to take. I don't give enough attaboys, and I realize that, but, you know, we're in war. And when we win, there'll be plenty of time to congratulate each other. But I do want to point out this, that anybody who takes time out of their day and takes a day out of their life, or many days, as the case may be, to be there for somebody else when they're fighting for their freedom, you are exceptional. You are doing exceptional work. You are making a difference in an exceptional way. And what you're doing sets you apart from most everybody else on the planet. So I want to take a moment and just thank each and every one of you who has ever been there in support of another, even one time, but especially those that have been committed to court support and to be there for each other. It makes a difference. We're making history with this work. It's not fun work. A lot of people come and go from the Human Solution because they see what great work we've done. They come aboard and they think it's going to be another party group. And the truth is, it's a lot of hard work, and it requires a commitment that is exceptional. And so for everybody who has been a court supporter, who continues to be a court supporter, I tip my hat to you. I want to thank the Coffee Party Radio Network for allowing us to have our show here. And I want everybody to realize that there are a number of shows, including a Living Room Conversation. I Take Liberty with My Coffee, Your Weekly Constitutional, The Conscious Bridge, and A Muslim and a Catholic Wake Up in America. These are among the shows on this Blog Talk Radio station. And I believe virtually every single day there are at least one show on this station. So Coffee Party is an ally of the Human Solution. We are mutual members of the UCCA, the United Coalition of Cannabis Activists, and we are working together to ensure civil rights and to end prohibition. So just want to give props out here. I want to thank Mike Harris, who's been an exceptional and diligent screener and has been helpful on many levels. Anybody who is working on the media side of things, Mike has been instrumental in many of our stories that have gotten air to catch that air. Again, take a minute and think about reality. Think about the fact that you're here today and you may not be here tomorrow. Remember that you have the ability to choose your to prioritize what's important to you. You'll do what's important to you. So I'm asking you to consider making the world a little better place to be important to you. And join us in our effort to change the world for the better and end prohibition. And on that note, I thank you all for joining us, and we will see you next week.